This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, gonna be in prison with Chad Daybell.
Rick Astley, by the way.
Got Rickrolled early.
And because reality is stranger than fiction, today those two worlds collide.
Chad Daybell and Rick Astley, outside of my head, in real life, they collide in the letters of Chad Daybell from prison.
Yes.
The moment has come. Hell has frozen over.
Isn't today the rapture? Isn't the rapture supposed to take place today too?
What? Well, now we know why.
Exactly. Are you serious? Was this on the schedule, or is this just happening because of Rick Astley and
well, chicken or the egg here? I'm not sure, but I know today was supposed to be the rapture because I was going to fill up my gas tank yesterday, and I went, well, why bother?
Exactly. Hey, you know, you're exactly right. It will just be filled for you. It happens, like Chad Daybell getting down to Rick Astley. So we're going to go through Chad Daybell's letters from prison. Number 5 and number 6 is now out there. It was kind of a delay. I was wondering if they're going to get to drop number 6 or if somebody said, maybe this is a bad idea. But apparently, well, dumber minds have prevailed. So we're going to go through that. And then in the next hour, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see Dateline on Friday.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Sandra Birchmore. This is a case that we've been following here for more than a year. And it's fascinating. It's horrible. It's the story of the young woman who groomed from the age of 14 in the Canton, Massachusetts Police Explorer program, was groomed by one of the officers, Matthew Farwell, who's now facing federal charges for this, eventually is pregnant and is murdered. They initially ruled it a suicide for years locally. Canton said, suicide, suicide. Well, guess what? One of the officers that was involved, you know, with her and the whole damn thing, they're facing charges now, and it goes way back, and it involves at least 4 officers essentially passing this young woman around like a piece of meat, and it's so, so disturbing and such a cover up. And yes, I said Canton, which is right by Stoughton, which is right in Karen Reed country, which is right in Proctor country, which then you also go, oh, well, what's the other case that they've had issues with? The Anna Walsh, the Brian Walsh case, where they try to get all the evidence thrown out because Proctor was the lead investigator on that. Well, they didn't throw it away. They're obviously not throwing this away either. But it shows a systematic corruption problem within that general geographic area, within those general departments that share resources. Now, because one is bad over here, it doesn't necessarily make this one over here. They're all very separate, very different cases. You can't say, well, because there's a cover up here, every crime in this area is BS. No, you can't. But there is certainly what appears to be quite a cover up that took place. And we're going to dive into that. Bob Mata, defense attorney, is going to be joining us in the next hour to go through all of that. But we're going to start today, like I said, Chad Daybell and the letters. We've been going through them. This is his prison letters. He's trying to tell his side of the story. And we've made it up to letter number 5. Who's excited?
This is my favorite. I'm just beaming over here. I just can't get enough of this.
In Chad's own words, because we've AI'd Chad, basically, took one of his speeches some years ago. So when people go, well, this doesn't sound real, Chad doesn't sound real.
No.
Chad's horrible at reading. Chad reads at about a third grade level.
So, and this is a really good facsimile of Chad.
If you listen to Chad actually speaking and then listen to this, you're like, oh, this is just how Chad sounds. He reads like a third grader. Like, you remember, like, Around the World, where we're all going to read a paragraph, and then every once in a while, it'd be really, I mean, I was one of those kids who freaking hated that.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because now I can riff off of a teleprompter all day. But back then, Reading copy, reading anything out loud, not my forte.
Remember when you used to count how many people before you and you'd figure out what the paragraph was? And
then yes.
And then somebody throw you a curveball and it was the one after that?
Yeah, then like somebody's like, can I get a bathroom pass? And you're like, yeah, oh, you're like, crap, now I got to move to this paragraph. And I hated that.
Thanks for all the stress you just gave me, Stacey. That just ruined my whole day because, I feel the pressure already.
I know.
I think it was nerves, though. I mean, it was anxiety. It was being afraid of being embarrassed. It was all that. I was shy and all. And so it was like, I just don't want to screw this up. Also horrible at around the world flashcards and math and like multiplication. To this day, I don't know multiplication tables. My mother tried to drill that into me one summer with flashcards. Like, do this. And like, I don't remember.
That doesn't help, though, either, does it? When the parents it does not help.
No, nope. I hated it even more. And to this day, what happens if you don't have a calculator with you at all times? I got a calculator with me at all times. We all have calculators and we have Word calculators now that can do all that. So, anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here of anger. Let's begin going into the Chad Daybell letter. This is number 5. We have 2 of them to go through today. And let's begin and take a listen to what Chad has to say as he tells his side of the story.
I'm eager to explain the events of 2019 to you, but it is very important that I first build a solid foundation of facts. Once these facts and my religious beliefs are properly explained, the events of 2019 will finally make sense.
Finally. But
during my court trial, I was bothered at how simple, well-known beliefs were twisted by the state into sinister, frightening ideas that the state repurposed. Claiming these ideas were the catalyst for terrible crimes I did not commit time after time, it was the state who defined what my religious beliefs are, not the witness on the stand. As I read through the trial transcript, it is even more obvious on paper. The state repeatedly made inaccurate statements in the form of questions, and the witnesses would get into a rhythm of saying yes or correct many times in a row without hesitation.
Yes.
The result was a distortion of my beliefs, and I think an incomplete picture or half story of what the witnesses actually heard or saw. And unfortunately, my lawyer failed to fill in those blanks on cross-examination. So I feel it is best to begin by sharing with you my near-death experiences, which have had very significant impacts on my life. There have been 4 times in my life when I've actually died, and my spirit has gone into another realm before returning to my body. The LDS Church teaches that a human being consists of 2 parts, a spirit body and a physical body. The spirit body resides inside the physical body and gives it life. When we die, the spirit and the body separate from each other. The spirit continues to live and goes into the spirit world while the body ceases to function. For example, picture your spirit as your hand and your body as a glove. The glove is just a covering and it can't move without your hand inside it. A near-death experience,
like a condom,
or NDE, is like when the hand is briefly removed from the glove and then put back inside. NDEs can be found in historical records dating back thousands of years among all races, nations, and religions. They have been part of LDS lore since the church was founded, and NDEs were regularly printed in the church's newspapers and magazines. Many NDEs indicate, as LDS doctrine confirms, that
XKY.
Before we were born, we lived as part of a heavenly family. We were eager for the chance to come to Earth and receive a physical body. We understood it would be a challenging experience, but that our time on Earth would help us grow emotionally and spiritually. We all helped write our own life plan or blueprint for what we would accomplish during our lives, who we would interact with, and when our life would end. Most NDEs occur when someone dies, but it isn't their time to go. They are sent back into their body to complete their life mission. My first near-death experience was rather short, but it's had a profound effect on me. It was August 1985, and I just turned 17. I was at Flaming Gorge Reservoir in northern Utah as part of a church youth group that included several of my friends. We had started the day by leaping into the reservoir from cliff ledges along the lake shore that were about 20 feet high. That was fun, but then we noticed a 60-foot high cliff that jetted out over the water. It looked like a natural diving board. We saw someone jump off it, and soon we were scrambling up the hillside to reach it. Once we got up there and saw how high it truly was, we were intimidated, but we were also stupid teenagers. My friends convinced me I should jump first. I shook off my nervousness and gazed down at the water below me. Finally, I pushed off with my right foot and began my descent. I remember thinking, this is taking a really long time. When I eventually hit the water, it felt like I had slammed into concrete. A shock went through my entire body, and I saw a flash of white light. I felt an audible pop at the base of my skull, and I thought, oh no, I broke my neck. I also wondered if I'd cut open my forehead, because there was a brief searing pain above my eyes. I quickly realized something even more alarming had happened. My spirit was partly out of my body. The best way to describe it is that my physical body went deeper into the water than my spirit did. This caused my spirit to pop out through my head, but with my spirit's knees stuck in my skull. Yeah. In other words, for some reason, I didn't make it all the way out of my body. It was more like three-fourths out. During those few moments, I was in another dimension. I saw an endless white plain in all directions, and I heard a deep, rich melody that sounded like a synthesizer. As I pondered the music later, it was very similar to a song called 1984 that opens Van Halen's 1984 album.
No.
The song is an instrumental that is just over a minute long.
It was 85.
It definitely has the same uplifting, rich, heavenly sound that I heard while out of my body. I noticed the pain was gone that I had initially experienced. There was a soothing warmth surrounding me, and I saw little pellets of light and energy rushing toward me from all directions. These pellets were absorbed by my spirit, and I felt wonderful, even euphoric, and at complete peace. However, my physical body soon started to float toward the surface. My spirit quickly reversed course through my head and was sucked back into place. I instantly felt chilled and somewhat paralyzed. I must have taken a while getting to the surface because one of my friends who had been standing on the shore had jumped into the water to rescue me. He grabbed hold of me and towed me to the water's edge. All I said to him was, "Something snapped when I hit the surface. I'm done for the day." After I returned home from Flaming Gorge, my entire body was sore for a week. I felt off kilter, like my body and spirit were disjointed. Sometimes my right eye would go blind, but if I hit the side of my head with my palm, I could see again. On the other hand, I was spiritually changed.
Let's stop for a
second. I'd glimpsed another dimension, and it had felt like home.
So this is what death apparently sounds like.
Do not invoke Van Halen.
This is how death sounds. Van Halen synthesizers that lead into Jump.
I'm making a list of songs that Chad has ruined for me for the rest of my life. Whitney's on the list, and now Van Halen.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.